When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty, it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mates and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started.
It's the booty booty.
It's time to get this party started.
With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
Andy, Jimmy, JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to Footy Prime the Broadcast, a broad perspective of all things footy. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Okay, welcome to Footy Prime, the broadcast, where Rian Wilkinson just came to Emma Humphrey's rescue in tech, which is a sentence you'll never hear me ever utter again.
I got glasses, and now I'm good at tech.
Obviously, savior, so thank you, Rian.
I want to introduce you properly. Emma, not just bring you in with Rian's aid here, but so Emma, you are the director of women's soccer development at Whitecaps, and you are the U17 head coach for the Canadian women's national team. And welcome. We're so happy that you could join us today. And I know that you guys
finished a
disappointing kind of result in terms of wanting to qualify for that U17 World Cup. And with Dominican Republic hosting, there were only two berths available. But we want to talk to you about all kinds of stuff. So we're going to dive deep into that. But I want to know a little bit more about you as a player and what it was like for you growing up and how you got into soccer. And did you always envision yourself becoming a coach?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think I did always envisage myself becoming a coach. I actually stopped playing really young. I was about 25, something like that. And I actually did a teaching degree. I thought I was always going to be a teacher. I went through a bit of a weird period where I just sort of fell out of love a little bit with the game but I kind of always knew I wanted to get into education. So I was kind of one of those kids that I played for my senior team really early. I think I was first capped around 17 or 18. And I was given a lot quite quickly and probably didn't appreciate it. U 18, U 20 World Cup, Senior World Cup, all like within a really short space of time, and it was just quite a lot for me. And so, yeah, like long story short, just kind of took some time away from the game, and then thought I was going to be a teacher, but then I actually entered the classroom and was like, well, this is like a different beast. With like 14-year-old boys throwing spitballs or whatever at you. and I'm a history teacher too, like that. So let's be real. It's not like, it's probably not the most exciting topic for kids, but I love it. Yeah. So I get more excited than they did. But then I moved back home, like a different period, right, where there was no professional football in New Zealand at that time. And so just came home. John Herdman was our like director of football in New Zealand. Job came up and ended up kind of getting into coaching, probably because I didn't have a job at the at the time. But I obviously knew John because I played for him for about like 8-9 years in New Zealand. He was like my U14s national team coach or whatever, NDC equivalent, and then went on to coach me U20s and senior team. I got pretty lucky getting into the game with John, and then like got a pretty good first impression of being a coach too.
And then you left for a spell as well, right? You went to the US?
So I played in the US at college. I didn't have the best college experience. Like if you look at me, my frame, like I'm not really probably suited to NCAA. Also probably like just like cultural difference to New Zealand, to America. Like it was like a real culture shock for me. I probably didn't play the best I could have played, like didn't love the experience, got caught up in going to uni instead a little bit. So that period was an interesting period for me where you move away from your country, you've had a lot of success in a small country, you know, in a smaller country, and then opening it up to NCAA, probably a style that didn't suit me as much. And then, the positive was I got a really good education out of it. You know, I did 8 years of uni or something like that when I was in America, and it sort of come out the other side, with an education degree, which massively helps me, obviously, with my understanding of being a coach too.
Nice. So Emma, I think I was telling Amy, you were in Canada, your son was born in Canada. I love that you've got a Canadian son. Your
name
wife's
Jack, right?
In New Zealand. Yeah, Jack, just like you, Amy.
I've got a Jack as well.
Oh, I didn't know that actually.
Yeah, my oldest is Jack. He's 14. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're super proud to have a Canadian kid. I've got two. I've got a dog too. So when we first moved here, Billy and Jack are our two sons. So I was about 25, 26 when I first moved to Canada. And then Billy was, we're here with us like ever since then. So he's getting a bit older now. I'm 37. So,
you moved to the UK, and I think you're assistant coach for Liverpool. You've come back to Canada. You're obviously from New Zealand. You went to school in the US. I was talking to Amy. It must be quite interesting to have such a diverse, different experience of the game. What would you say Canada has that's different, that's special? And where do you think we need to put some attention after having so many different experiences?
Yeah, I honestly think that little, like coming to Canada early, I actually really consider myself kind of a Canadian coach because I grew up coaching, and like I didn't really have a huge bank of experience in New Zealand. I came here and, you know, like I've learned so much being in Canada. But forming that foundation here helps me understand what I think Canadians' X factor is, and understand like what it is to be Canadian as well, and you know, to aspire to play for Canada. Like when you're in other countries, like the respect levels for any other country is never as high. You know, like when you're in Canada, you really feel it, that people believe in the team and they know that we can be absolutely world class. I think what made me like really understand that though was going away and coming back. Being in England, like just realizing, you know, what other countries' strengths and weaknesses are too. You know, you look at like the passing game in England, and it's like the technical level of of the passing game, pass move, understanding of the whole game is super high. But then you come back to Canada and you're like, yeah, but like we're outrageously good at dribbling. We have outrageous forwards that can beat any team in the world, you know, like. And you kind of look at, like, you can't come back and go, like, oh, look at what every other country has. It's like, yeah, we're a massive women's football country and, like, we are absolutely world-class at what we do as well. So I think the danger when you go away is, like, oh, everyone else is good at this and we need to become like that. It's, for me, and, like, when Bev and I were having discussions about coming back, it's like, it's not what everyone else is good at. Yeah, it's tweaking, like, our model, like, modern game. You know, what do we require that are going to bring out our best attributes the best? You know, what other things can we add that are going to bring out our X factor? It's not we want to change to be this or that, like Canada's world class in itself. It's like, how do we enhance what we do is kind of the thought process, I think, a little bit more.
Do you think changing the pathway, making it more varied, more robust, with Project 8 coming in, what that will do for the pathway? Do you think that helps to add to our X factor? It helps to sort of develop different profiles. And then as those players get up towards the peak, get up towards the top in the national teams, then we have sort of more to offer in terms of not only tactical profiles, but player profiles.
Oh yeah. Like it's going to be a game changer. I can't wait. I think it's what we're waiting for. You know, like I don't think it's any secret that like what we do in NDCs and with our national teams to a degree too is like is a stopgap because we don't have professional football yet to fully develop the country. You know, we need to relook at our model again. You know, like it's exciting. It's not that everything's gone wrong by any means. Like there's certainly a pipeline for the national team, but we need more than that, you know, like we need more players of that high-end quality. I think diversity with the type of player that we're going to start producing will become more too, you know, different. Like at the moment, it's what, you know, a small group of people are thinking is good for Canada, you know, and we hope that like, you know, we're doing a job in producing players for the senior team. But there's so many more good players out there and, you know, having different minds work on the kids too. Like maybe someone sees something that I don't in an individual. That happens all the time. And we absolutely have to be missing talent, like 100%. That's why kids, like, develop outside of the system. And I think there's going to be so many more out there as well that they could then go on to challenge for a national team as well. The other, like, big one for me is, you know, it's obviously it's no secret about, like, we're not the most resource nation in the world, but we try our best to innovate. I think one of the big, big gaps is meaningful competition for our kids. Yeah. Like, nobody grows up like, oh, I can't wait to go to training. You know, like, I shouldn't, oh, well, I hope the NDC kids aren't listening too much, but Project 8. But
that's our promo clip, Emma. We're going to push that everywhere.
Like, nobody grows up like, oh, I can't wait to go to training. And, you know, the biggest thing that we know but we can't control is in the NDCs, like, we play boys all the time. Again, like, oh, Rian, I don't know if you know what it's like, but, well, no, I know you know what it's like because with John, you play boys all the time. Like when they get by you, sometimes you just want to grab them because it's like, it's not always like completely realistic or, you know, like, it's also not like, it's not like I'm playing for this, you know, like when you play against them either, which is all part, like, emotion is football. And you lose that sometimes when you, but we're super grateful for the boys teams that play us, but there's elements you can't replicate either within it. And then you look at the NDCs and they all just win the League Ones. It's like, that's not what I want. Like that, like, I want these kids to be stretched, you know, like I want them feeling the emotion of a win, a loss, you know, everything that comes with it. Because you talk about like what some of those gaps are, like meaningful competition, whether it's at our NDCs, whether it's with our youth national teams, you know, like that for me is a huge gap right now in our system. And not just like our top three kids experiencing that, you know, like it's like a huge net of people that can experience that and go on to learn from all of those moments. I just think that's the big gap right now that Project 8 is going to massively help.
Yeah, I think don't think people realize the challenge that you have as a youth national team coach. You talked about the issues with having these centralized programs in some of our provinces, how many players are missed because of course it's such a narrow window. The lack of meaningful games. You could play a boys team 1 month and the next month that boys team becomes a men's team. And so you've got to find a new one. And also it changes how you play when you're playing boys teams because the speed sometimes is that you can't take risks at the back, or you have to go more direct than you want to, or there's all these little things you adjust because you're playing a team that's just fast. They're not better than you in terms of technical, but they're faster. So you make one mistake and they score and there's a winning piece you've got. It's just a really, really challenging thing to adjust. Mexico's got their league going now. So their youth teams for the past 10 years have been doing extremely well. Haiti, a lot of their players live full-time in national team camps. So just a reality check, how many camps did you have before going into this under 17 tournament?
We had our pre-qualifiers was our first camp as a group. We get to scout through our NDCs and I visit the centers. We're lucky enough to go to Portugal as a group. Maybe lucky enough is not the right term for it, but we had a camp where we got to play two probably meaningful games before this World Cup qualifier. So that's what I mean. We know that. We know that that's a gap. Mexico's played 20 games. I think they played every top team in the world before they play us in that game. That's just the ones I've scouted is I've seen them play Spain, I've seen them play France, again, Portugal. So we knew we had a relative game that we could compare to. They played Japan, they played all the best teams in the world because strategically that's what they can do. I think it's hard because you look at it and it still hurts. I can't sit here and go, oh, I'm happy with how we performed, or I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get home because I'm so it hurts because I know how good our kids are, and I'll always look at what else I could have done, whether it's my selections, whether it's tactics again for the system, whether it's whatever that is. I think what we know is coming that's exciting is we probably will never Mexico will probably in the top two or three in the world with their resource. We've been third for a long time now. I think it was 12 years or something since we beat them at U17 level. I think what hurts is how close you come, knowing that we do everything to innovate. The NDC short term, I believe, are the biggest tool for us to provide that environment. It's not perfect. We will miss players, of course, but to get that best with best environment is really important to us. But what's exciting, and if I'm the others, hopefully I think looking at our performance, and anyone that watched the game would know how close that game was. It could have gone either way. We probably had the better chances and didn't put them away. It's part of it.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's killer. I know, but show the potential of it, and then you go, what's Project 8 going to add?
Yeah.
So if I'm it hurts, but I also know we're not getting everything wrong. If I compare my last group, and we look back, you reflect, you have to, and we knew at that World Cup we weren't good enough, and there were gaps in our game that we needed to change. We needed to change the curriculum. We needed to change quite a few things within our system. We met together. We flew everyone in here and into Vancouver, actually, senior team staff, youth staff, and we made some big changes in our curriculum. And I think you could tell by the style of play that we're trying to do now that the kids are problem solving better, short game, long game, our defending structures that work against top tier teams. And I think what hurts is coming that close. As the head coach, you feel like you've let that group down a bit. That's a, I think, probably a natural feeling, and I'll wear that. But like it's also you go, what individuals are coming through that system, and I could rattle off like five or six that I believe, like maybe even more, that can play for Canada in that group. Yeah. And that excites me more than anything. You know, and that tournament can be what knocks them on to win the U20 championship, because we've got Project 8 coming for that group too. Or, yeah, you know, some of them, like Kaylee Hunton's got two U20s in that mix. So, yeah.
I think that in a way, like Canada soccer has its troubles. We're all aware, right? Like they're doing what they can. I don't mean that to be that question to be a bash on that. Like what you guys are doing with the resources you have, what you hit on there is huge. I've suffered the pain that you're suffering, so I know it. I'm aware that you're taking it on, but I also need to talk about realities. The number of players that Canada soccer through the 17s, 20s are producing for our senior team, I think we have to be one of the best countries in the world to getting our youth players through to the senior. What I'm really interested in, Bev, Jesus, Emma, sorry.
I love how Emma, when we're trying to troubleshoot, jumping on StreamYard, and you were so proud of being able to help Emma, and Emma saying it was not Bev. Bev's the tech expert. It wasn't Bev that planted the seed. You were going to say it.
God, sorry, Emma. What I wanted to ask is, with the heartbreak of that loss and knowing you weren't qualifying, what you managed to say, you and your staff, how you managed to turn that around for such a strong performance to finish third. Because that for me was really indicative of the group and how close you were. And that performance then was probably one of the best of the tournament in a game that you could say it's meaningless, but it wasn't. It really left a statement. So how you managed to do that?
Yeah, no, do you know what? It's one of the... this is what hurts. You can tell it's so emotional, like, for me. This group is one of the most connected groups off the pitch. Like, there's so many fighters in that group that, like, just love Canada, love playing for you. They gave everything. Like the sobbing from the kids, you know, knowing that they're not going to a World Cup was killer. I think, like, in my shoes, all you could do, like, is remind them what that means, like remind them what the shirt is like, I say we because I hope I'm almost allowed now. It's almost 10 years now in Canada, but like, you know, it's not, Bev actually said it, so I can't claim it. She's like, loves her little cheesy lines, doesn't she? But she said in Canada, it's not like, it's not what we do, it's how we do it. And you know, I think like it's holding yourself high in those moments. Like it's knowing that we did ourselves proud in that game. Like anyone watching it would have seen that, and that they gave everything. Like there was nothing left. You got Annabelle Chukwu, who's also been struggling with injuries too, by the way, playing through them. Same with Isabel, like just giving everything they have. And I think like, when they knew, also I think the big one for kids is like, you haven't let anyone down, guys. Like you have, like the young kids, these emotions will drive them to be better. Like that's what I'm saying is like this is what NDCs lack. This is what, like those, even for me, like this is what I love about the game, and I missed when I had those two years out, is like, I don't love losing. I'm the most competitive person out there. Like I'm so emotional. I just want to fight people when I lose. But
I don't know anything about that, Emma, at all.
but that drives you to never want that feeling again. Like I hate losing so bad that it drives me to win more, you know, and whether that's a good motivator, bad, it doesn't matter because it's just what I do. And some people love winning so much, that's what they're, but I hate losing so much. And these kids will be the same. Like they will have felt that. That's such an important feeling. Nobody goes through life like, oh, I only ever win things. Like that's just not a thing. And so as much as it hurts, I'm like, these emotions are like what drives kids. You look at Jordan Heitmer, Julia Grosso, Dead Riviere, they didn't qualify for that U20 World Cup, right, with Bev. And I think there's more. I'll probably just have mentioned the kids that I remember having the help with in our environment afterwards. But like, you know, that will have like really shaped them and what comes next. I haven't spoke to any of them about it, but like winning and losing is so important.
Yeah.
I wanted to, before we move on to other stuff, you said something when Reen was asking you about your prep going into this qualification process, and you said lucky, and then you tried to reframe it. But in a way, that's due to Greg Kerfoot and him sort of supplementing what limited resources we do have in Canada. And that goes back, I mean, I played for the national team from 99 until 2009. And by and large, the bulk of the support and the time that we had together in terms of preparation was thanks to that man. So, I mean, we have to sort of take care of our national teams if we want to see them have success. So I know Canada Soccer has limited resources, but we have to be supporting you better. We have to be supporting these young players in a better way so that they can have success. And it doesn't just happen by accident, but to that, you mentioned the positives were the individuals that you saw shine, but pulling players out of those respective NDCs, they play a very possession heavy style, a short game. These are highly technical players. Why do you think there was a little bit of a disconnect between those that or that particular playing style or brand of football and then what you guys played at qualifications, where it seemed to be heavily reliant on longer balls and a more direct style of play?
It's interesting, isn't it? I haven't watched Mexico game back. It's too hard right now. But it's in my list for this week. But actually, like, we probably varied how we played more than we ever have. Again, like, I haven't watched it back, so I need to look back through it. But what we want to do is short game, be brave, like pick your moments to play out under high pressure. Medium game, meaning like you clips into fullbacks. You want to make sure you've got fullbacks that can bring down the ball, because if you play short every time, like teams will just high press you, they'll know it, they'll jump on you, they'll just keep numbers high and then less at the back. You have to be able to vary it. And then your longer game, like we didn't use one goalkeeper direct, meaning like when you squeeze your team up and go long. But what we do is like into or onto clips. So we're like, if you're being high pressed with like, let's say a front six against you and you match up for numbers, then you use that in between space. So, you know, it's like, I'm now going to clip the ball into like wide forward off the front or a nine off the front to be able to pick it up underneath and use your width. Like, it, so for me, we just like to vary. Like, it should be the same style as what you see at NDCs. Now, the difference is the athleticism of the teams you're playing against.
Right.
Like, so, so when you're playing Haiti and their front line is absolutely rapid, you know, like, how does that work versus when you're playing in League One? Like, it's a completely different level. For us, it's like when we played Mexico, we played short a lot more than Mexico did. All they did was go long, you know, like, so now they do it long with purpose. They can pull the ball down. They have underneath support. They use their whip. They're super technical with it. So for me, like our ability to vary our style is so important. It's not we play one way. It's like, what's the opponent giving to us? And I think, like if anything, what worries me is that every single time we play any team in Canada, everyone's playing short. Everyone's playing short. You know, I don't remember every team, like, that we play in CONCACAF gets the ball with their goalkeeper in their hands and that thing gets snow on it. Like, you saw the goal we conceded against Haiti. Like that was almost on our 18-yard box by the time our centre-backs, you know. So super important aerial dominance, being able to head the ball properly with good technique. Like, how to direct play is the number one build-up at CONCACAF, whether it's Mexico, whether it's US, so all of this, we play short our whole lives. Okay, good technical habits, absolutely needed, but it can't be the only style we play against, because otherwise the first time you play that is at like a big CONCACAF event, which is one of our big learnings from last cycle too, was I had kids that couldn't head the ball And we went to play Jamaica. Every time the ball with the goalkeeper, I love it how I do this, by the way. I don't know what goalkeepers do.
Don't know what they're doing.
Any goalkeeper are laughing at me right now. The gets a ball, booms it, you know, and then our centre backs are letting that thing bounce, and then chaos is where these teams live. But what they're great at is like lovely technique to like bring down an aerial ball and then link. So they want the chaos. It's what Mexico are fantastic at, is like a big kick from a goalkeeper and then like exceptional technique to bring it down and link other players in when you've got a 4v4, for example, because say we're set in a high press.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, those like, and again, I go back to Project A, different styles, different, you know, strengths and weaknesses of players, teams, and I'm like, we're going to see a whole bunch of more different like styles, types of play, like, and there's not good and bad in football. It's like because youth football has been so much focused on technical development, which is important too. I don't want to like take away from that, but like every team plays the same way. When's the last time you saw a goalkeeper get it and boom it at your back four? Like, we need to see that in moments to know how we defend it too.
Yeah, I think like I really like this conversation, Emma, because I think as Canadians, we have very high expectations of winning from all our teams, but there's not a lot of understanding of the constraints, the challenges, but also I think of how much our staff actually are doing. So I'm sure you can speak to it better, but I mean, you and your staff are working really hard to try and make sure as many players are seen, that they're getting the kind of curriculum across this giant country of ours. I'm sure all your staff have full-time roles and other things as well as this one. You were just saying you're also working for the Whitecaps. So I think it's important that our population here, what you are achieving and how many players, I'll reiterate, how many players in Canada we move through our system. And yes, we need to broaden the base. Yes, we need to have different types of players. There's all these issues. But the fact that we're able to do that is the reason why we have Bev with a gold medal and also going into these next tournaments with these exciting young players that have come through our system. What would you say is the key quality that Canadians have that you've seen? And don't say connection, because I think that's that thing we come back with. I think we are very good at having bought in players. But what is it that Canadian players do bring to all our youth national teams and can bring to the senior team that's different here than in other countries?
Yeah, like I think we talk about behaviors a lot. So behavior over tactics is number one. And things like never turn down a 1v1. Like, you're 1v1, take it. The game's as simple as that. Like, if you're out wide and you, like, I don't care if you're the quickest player or you're the most technical, I want to see what it is that you bring that's different to anyone else that's in front of you. And I think I talked about the wide forwards or the, you know, forwards within the kind of, I can talk about centre backs too, by the way, because like probably different attributes based on different positions. We've been talking about like for the past couple of years, you know, obviously how do we replace Sinclair, hence the forward probably discussion. But like you go like, what take you 1v1, look and play forward. Like, can we be the best team at looking and playing forward? Because I think like transition is absolutely key to the Canadian game. You know, making sure that we have the technicians that bring transition to life as well. Like, I would look at it and go, Jesse is absolutely world class at bringing transition to life. And we have the forwards that can work off her as well. It's not our only game, but like you go, what we are absolutely world class at, it's that as well. And then you go like with the defending, it's front foot mentality. Like, nobody gets beat when you're 1v1s. You go like, for me, defending behaviors, it's like it's a mentality, it's a mental toughness to make sure you're winning your individual battles, and again, like you're doing that for your teammates too. I think like I go back to like behavior first over any tactics, and I think like for us, like it's what you do when you're out there and the impact that your behavior is having, your strong mentality that brings to life any tactics that we want to be playing in it.
Yeah, nice.
I wanted to ask you, Emma, one last thing, and you touched on it right off the hop. Was actually one of the questions I had about meaningful competition. But given the history you've had and the places that you've had the opportunity to coach and to play, in the UK, for example, I think Reen was telling me you were the assistant coach for Liverpool Women. You grew up and played in New Zealand. You played in the US. What's the one obstacle or thing lacking in Canada here in order to create that meaningful competition? I think Project 8 goes a long way into helping that along. But in terms of the age group that you're working with specifically, what can Canada do better?
Meaningful competition. This is one that we just like rack our brains for all the time at NDCs. I think honestly under the current structure, because you've got to, what you're balancing is best for best, which is a super, super important principle. With the top players, like they need to be challenged by each other, and that talent pool, you know, when you don't have senior players, they are their best competition. I know you're saying like if you can't use Project 8 as your answer, but I'm like, we need professional football, like we absolutely need it. Like these kids, like I look at, for example, that goalkeeper that makes a fantastic save on Annabelle in the first couple of minutes, right? We should start in goalkeeper for a Mexican pro team. Mm-hmm. You know, like understands how to manage key moments in the game, has the maturity to like, you know, to lead a team like that. You know, like, and I'm not saying like we have to just go, it's outside of our control. I think like a meaningful competition comes through these kids not being the best players already in Canada. It comes from the NDCs not winning every league that they play in. So like the best kids in all these NDCs should be pros. Like loads of them should be in that mix of, you know, we've got eight teams or whatever it is. Like they need to be in amongst the back end of the roster fighting for a spot, like, you know, learning what that feels like, and then when you earn it, making sure you keep it. Like all these emotions, like we can't replicate that with NDCs. Mm-hmm. You know, what we can do, outside of obviously the national team needs to play more games. Like the more connected you are as a group, the more you know, you understand each other's partnerships, the more you know instinctively where each other are moving, of course. Like that's a given. But outside of that, it's, we have to take the kids overseas, really, to be beaten. Don't get me wrong, on an individual game, people can say, oh, NDC Ontario didn't beat XYZ, but it's like, yeah, but you watch the game and they're set and like, yeah, they're not being challenged athletically or technically, you know, like, so they need to be beat by a like with like sort of opponent. So take them overseas, we do things like that, maybe within our groups, but yeah, boys, like you, with what we currently do, I think we've really stretched. Like you've had sort of top minds working on what these kids can be doing. I think the real answer is they need professional football like every other country in the world has.
Yep. And you said the word a number of times, and it's a word that Rian likes too, and it's being innovative. I think that's what we have to be with Project 8, and how we're approaching it and how we're developing players, but also in how we're finding games. And then maybe that's the tipping point for not making the allure of NCAA, but saying that's not the only option, that like that's developing you for 3 or 4 months of the year versus, as you talked about, that goalkeeper who's training in a professional environment day in, day out, the entire year. You can't compete with it. So I think we start to chip away at that with Project 8, with the professional domestic league, and then finally giving these players that challenge. And as you said, it's the mental, the physical rigors of adapting with that constantly. And that's where you see like the ebbs and flows, and you have to cope with it for better or worse, but then you're better for it on the other side.
Yeah. It's no secret, I'm not a fan of like NCAA for our top kids. I think like the moment professional football comes into Canada, like I want our best kids playing in that league. That's feel strongly about that. I should, like, NCAA is a great, you know, like experience. It's a, you know, like you talk about feeling emotion within football, kids will learn that, like for sure. Education, super important, of course, but not for everyone, but like a lot of people will hold that in high regard. you know,
says the history major.
Yeah, but like I, in terms of football, it's not good enough. The level's not good enough. So yeah, like, look at all the best US kids, they're not playing in it. Like, we need to stop our best kids going in that league. We need to keep them here in Canada. And like, nobody else cares about Canadians but us. Like, we can want other people to care about it. They don't. Like, I can tell you that from working in other leagues as well. They like the only people that will take care of the best Canadian kids will be our league, you know, like, and some of them, you know, short term, whether it's they start with us, they build, they learn how to be a pro in Canada, and then maybe they move on initially, you know, like, we've still set them up for success with whatever that chooses to be next. I also think Canada is a big enough country that we can be a top league in ourselves too over time, you know, and for like, just for these kids, the environment, a professional environment for Canadians is going to do wonders for our game. And I'm like, I'm a massive supporter that as soon as it's there, like, I would encourage all of our best kids to be staying home, playing in that Canadian Premier League.
Yeah. I think to add to that, we've got pretty wicked universities here in Canada. So I think, to be very clear, where I think all three of us would be huge fans of education as well as sport. And it's how we have that here at home, and our players don't feel like they have to go abroad to get that. So I'm hearing what you're saying. Like, it's, this is right now, part of our pathway in Canada is an American system. And I love what you said. Like, the only people that really care about Canadians are Canadians. Like, they are entities in the US, of course, they have to win there. There's a development issue there because there's so much of a winning mentality in such a short season. So it really isn't about maybe technical development and player development unless you're at a very special school, and not all of them are able to deliver that. So hearing what you're saying loud and clear. Emma, for just thank you for your honesty and clarity. I've known you for a long time, and I really enjoyed watching your team play. I was heartbroken for you in the group, but very excited about the talent. And I think you highlighted it again that this is a big setback, and you can't say it's not. It's so painful for you, your staff, for the players. But I have no doubt that a huge chunk of that team is going to go on to represent the 20s and probably the senior team as well. And your hard work in making that happen is very obvious to me. I've been a part of the system. I know what you're working with and against. So it sounds horrible, and I know you're not ready for it, but congratulations for the work you're doing with that group. Because it, for those in the game, we see it, and it's exciting for the future and for Project 8, because we've got a wealth of talent to choose from because of you and your staff. So thank you.
No, I really appreciate that. I think, like, you know, you sort of sat there when you hear that there's two spots in CONCACAF, and you're like, how? Because there's so much shit. Like, Haiti are a good team too. Like, and you're like, but when you hear it, you're like, what a challenge. Like, I would never want to be that person that goes, ooh, we haven't beat them in 12 years and now there's only two spots. Like, I want to be, all day I want to be that person that throws everything into it, and if that means that you come up short in the 100 and whatever minute, then I'd much rather be that person. And I know, like, for the team, like, they're that as well. Like, they 100% believe that they can beat Mexico, this group. I hope I won't be the head coach of the 20s, because that's Cindy, but like, I hope this hurt drives them like that, you know, to miss out on a World Cup when there's only two spots. You know, well, the US has missed out twice. They've not gone to two U20 World Cups. I told the group that, and they were like, you know, it is what it is. And it's part of football as well. So, no, yeah. I think, like, you're right. Like, you go, what's our number one job right now? I think obviously the more the teams get invested in, the more players, like, the wider the pool and the strength of the pool becomes, which is important for Canada Pro. I call it that, by the way. I don't know what we're calling it, right? Project A, sorry, Project A. I do know what we're calling it.
Canada Pro by Emma.
Yeah. But, like, you know, in terms of the national team, am I worried? Like, no. Like, our last U20s, which in my opinion, got wrongly crucified given their build-up in the last World Cup. Like, they literally went to that World Cup, you know, on off the back of the qualifiers. So, like, but what they did do and what Canada Soccer prioritised is making sure that our top kids are better than other countries. And if you go, what did that U20s cycle produce? And you go, Jade Rose, Simeon Liu, Olivia Smith. Would most countries be biting your hand off for that? And, you know, I think, like, I look back and I'm like, you know, I know that we'll always have critics out there, but I'm like, that's a good cycle. So you can focus on an outcome, of course. And like I said, I think the better the teams become, the more the depth becomes, which is important. But am I worried for our senior team? I think for the past 10 years, we've been doing something right in the youth pathway. Like, say, every cycle we're producing two or three, like maybe even more, you know, within that group that absolutely have potential to play or are already playing for Canada, and making sure that we give them the caps, not give them, they earn them, but like, you know, they accumulate enough to where when they're ready, they're ready. And I think that's an important part of our strategy. We don't talk too much about it because it's like, it's something that works behind the scenes, and it's important it works behind the scenes. But, you know, how is our senior team able to sort of keep its head above some of the opponents we're talking about that at youth level may beat us as teams, but at senior level we still keep our head above them is there is things that go on outside of team performances that are important in youth football as well.
Yeah. And I'll just one last thing. I know we're done. We're not saying, and I think we've been very clear about that, our pathway needs a lot of help. It's not working as it should. We need a professional league. Project 8 is coming. We need academies. There's work to be done to make sure that our players, have somewhere to play, but all different types of players. You highlighted that as well. Like, right now, the reality is you have an eye for a certain type of player. That's your head coach. That's the reality. You need all different types of players that are given opportunity so that we can keep that player pool as broad as possible, as varied as possible, so that we give our national team head coach the opportunity to pick the strongest possible team. What we have been able to achieve in the last decade is miraculous, and I use that very carefully. It is incredible, but we need help. Like, women's game is only going up. We see that in the numbers, in the attendance, in the transfer fees that are being lobbed around. Like, we are already late starting, so shut up, get it going, and let's help you and your youth teams, but also our senior team. And that's for us as football fans, soccer fans in Canada. Like, how do we help? Instead of, we need to criticize, that's important, everyone's involved and has a voice, but like, let's make sure we're doing things as well and not just being critical of a system that's all we have right now. So again, well done. And I look forward to watching so many of your team go on to further their careers, because it's inevitable.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Emma. It was great having you here, and you're welcome anytime you like. Hopefully you can come back and join us after, you know, some more success with Whitecaps or next major tournament or whatever it is. But Rian, you said a broad player pool, and here at the broadcast, we love a broad player pool. We love a broad player pool. But one last fun little question, Emma. So who wins in a flat out sprint, and who wins in a 10K between you and Bev?
Ooh, I'm the better athlete though.
So just, you win all contests?
Yeah, I'm just all around a better athlete than Viv. So, do you know what? Like, I was, no, she'll say it too.
She's no, better attack though.
Yeah, like, okay, in a sprint, yeah, I'm faster. But like, but I should be faster, right? Like, yeah. And then, and it's okay. Oh, it depends. She probably beat you after I had Jack.
That was your only window when you were postpartum?
Or pregnant.
Yeah.
While pregnant.
That's amazing.
I met this on a beach once. I think she complained about it for months. Her poor little head cramped up in the first 2 minutes.
Rian's absolutely right, because Rian's experienced this with me. She gets a lot of injuries and like a little bit of anxiety around injuries too. So, Bev didn't like play at a super high level though. So I feel like I'm justifying it now, but she's quite open about talking.
You're not even justifying, you're just knocking her on the head.
You're digging a hole for yourself.
It's okay, because there's another 20 days before she's home, so we're good.
Oh, good, yeah. Good. Just love it.
Thank you so much, Emma, for your honesty, for being so candid with us, and we appreciate your time.
That was awesome.
No problem. All right, guys. See you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Emma.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a T-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
That was great.
Yeah, so nice. I love the honesty, but also the clarity. And it's so painful to watch our youth teams not be successful or qualify. But when you hear Emma talking about just this group and how excited they are, how good they are, and then I forgot, like, they haven't beaten Mexico in 12 years, but as Canadians, we're like, of course we should win. You're like, they've had a professional league going for 10 years. Like, these players are playing professionally in other countries, and for us, they're playing for their NDCs, which are great, but they don't play any games. Our expectations are insane for what we're able to actually provide our youth.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
They're probably unfair.
They are.
That was huge. Like, that kind of stopped me in my tracks. 12 years.
And Haiti too. I mean, a country that has done so incredibly well, just being brutalized by earthquakes, by natural disasters. They brought their team together in Port-au-Prince and they train together every day. And two of our most exciting players coming out of CONCACAF have been Haitians playing abroad now. Just in amazing opportunities they're able to deliver these players because they have them playing full time together. And so beating them in that third place, I mean, the Canadians played really well after a huge disappointment. So I was proud of them. I watched that game and I watched a lot of that tournament. And yeah, I thought they were unfairly criticized.
Yeah, and to hear Emma talk about Annabelle, and she mentioned her twin Isabel as well, battling injuries. I mean, and she's their big gun. Right. She did Annabelle not help the 20s qualify for the U20 World Cup? Was it not her goal that sent them through?
Did the 20s qualify?
Yeah. The 20s are going to be at the U20 World Cup. Are they not?
I should have done a little bit more research.
I think that they have, but I think she did that already this year. And then she got to also compete with the 17s.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's some really exciting talent, and Emma plays. It's hard. Must be so hard to be married to the national team coach. There's all these like, oh well, but
she's the better athlete.
She's way, yeah, clearly. But also, I mean, in her own right, I've worked with Emma before they were married, and she's a top coach who is Canadian. She has a very strong New Zealand accent, but she's really grown up here in Canada. She's given so much to our system. So many of our youth team players have come through her Whitecaps. You know, Jordan Heidema, Jade Riviere,
Julia Grosso.
Julia Grosso, or just to name a few. You know, we had Emma Reagan as well came through, and she's playing professionally. There's a bunch of others I'm missing right now, but has been a big part of our pathway. And we're lucky to have such great coaches and staff, as she didn't get to talk about it much, but it's really easy to knock Canada soccer, but the amazing people that are working there in all different capacities that are doing sort of 2.5 jobs, not 1.5, mm-hmm. to try and give opportunity to our young players and success to them. It is amazing. And we must have one of the best rates in the world at bringing players through our system. It's not ideal. I have so many gripes against it, but it is amazing what we are doing with what we have. And Emma's a great example of that. I won't call her Bev again. Good God, what a cat.
That's going to be our promo clip, Rhea.
I think I was on the phone with Bev the other day and I called her Emma. So,
well, there you go.
You know, I'm equally rude.
I, you know what came to mind there? Tit for tat. I hate that expression. Don't you?
I'm a twin. Everyone calls me my sister's name. I'm used to, like, yeah, come on. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens. You have so many sisters.
I'm not even a twin. And I get my dad still calls me Cindy, Sarah, Bonnie, Amy.
Yeah.
And then he gets
to call me the dog's name. You're fine. That's hey, we talked a little bit about the amazing Haitian players coming through.
Yes.
But did you see the huge transfer fee that just happened last week for a Madrid player moving to the NWSL, over 800,000 euros?
It's insane. And just a couple of weeks prior, it was Jesse Fleming moving from Chelsea to Portland that had set the transfer record. And then all of a sudden we're going, that was at 300? We're like just below, and now we're up to 800. Yeah, Zambia's Rachel Kundinaji has become the most expensive women's footballer in history after joining Bay FC from Madrid.
I mean, it's, and then you see Arsenal selling out the Emirates, and then, the women's game right now for Project 8, and let's be clear, we're both biased and pretty excited about it, but mm-hmm. we keep saying we're late, but actually, like, there's no excuse. Like, we've got to get going. And it is such a moment in the women's sport with PWHL and the viewers. I mean, I love it. I was just talking to Jana Heffert the other day, and just how incredible the women's athletic landscape is right now, and how proud I am to be a part of it is amazing.
Yeah, as am I. And seeing them, there's, because they were at the Madame, initially the athletic center, the old Maple Leaf Gardens, which is, I think, like 5,000, 6,000. And then they sold out Scotiabank, Minnesota. They set records. It was like 13,000 and change. So I think every franchise has broken attendance records, and it just keeps growing. Like Marie-Philippe Poulin getting booed in Ottawa. Like, fucking bring it on. Like, that's great. You know, it's the new original six, right? It is.
I love that too, that story, that alignment, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd have to say that it is a moment in women's sport, but for Canadians, I've never seen a country more hesitant in terms of investment. It's crazy how much investment in the PWHL and in our league right now comes from abroad, because Canadians, we're so critical. Our expectations are so high, but we are so hesitant to actually, like, those of our Canadian population who have money, why are you not helping?
Yes.
It's actually wild.
Yes, I'm rich people who subscribe to the broadcast.
Rich, are they listening? Like,
we're talking to you, that one person.
It is really irritating. But what is great is seeing, you know, what's happening in, you know, the UK, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in the US, in terms of that investment now being put in. And usually Canadians follow quite nicely. I'll bash my kind. So hopefully we show some real growth here, and then Canadians will get on board and start jumping in themselves. But we do have
why is that though? Why is that about Canadians, for as great a country as we live in, for as proud a nation I think we are of one another, of lifting each other up, cheering each other on? Why are we so reticent to embark in something, to innovate, to start something that's Canadian?
Yeah.
You have to wait for it to have success elsewhere, or to piggyback on something else.
I don't know. And look, you and I represent our country, so proud to be Canadian, which is why I get aggravated. And we do have some incredible investors that have come in who are Canadian. So we do have a group. But when I think of our population, how much we love the sport, how much we expect from it, there's a lot more to come. I just don't know where and why we're frightened of innovation, why we're frightened of change. I just think we're so used to following in the US's footsteps. I mean, in every way. And that galls me. Really pains me to say, but it is true. I mean, it is almost like we wait to follow because you don't want to be accused of wasting money or, mm-hmm. you know, we are such a socialist. So like, don't want anyone to stand out too much, but
don't want to disrupt too much or make noise or ruffle feathers or whatever it is. It's almost like we're seeking approval somehow. We don't just want to grab something by the scruff of its neck, but that's what our friend Diana Matheson has done, right?
Yeah, I love that about Dee. She really is fearless. And that's what change involves. You got to take a leap of faith. And sometimes you get it wrong. Well, that's how innovation occurs. And that's, you know, PWHL is a wonderful example. They had such a short runway. I mean, they just made it happen. And I was talking to Jane. I love the conversation. And part of what she said was, sometimes you just got to go. You just got to make a decision and go. And she's right. And sometimes we're so careful to make sure everything's aligned. You know, like we can't, it's not a known entity. We don't know like how it's going to land. We don't know what this is. But if we don't try, I mean, we're already late. Like, what are we waiting for? So that's what I'm so excited about. It's like, let's just jump. Let's do this and get our women's sporting fans mobilized, which the PWHL has already showed us. The women, I'm not a huge hockey fan. I am obsessed with that league. I love it. And I expect the same to happen to a soccer game, you know, like just people that want to support women's athletics, opportunities for young girls to choose whatever they want to do in the future and have a place to play.
Mm-hmm. And not only like elevating the quality of soccer in a country, creating different pathways and like post-university opportunities, but everywhere, not just on the pitch. And I love that what you just said about Jana saying you sometimes just have to go because again, going back to our lack of ability in innovation or our hesitancy around innovation or doing something, spearheading something, it's paralysis by analysis, right? Like just go. And it's to sort of reduce it to a sporting analogy. If you're on the pitch and or on the ice or wherever you are with your sport, you have to make a decision. It won't always be the right decision, but you have to make that decision. And then the next time, maybe you do it a little bit better because you've sort of gleaned that experience from it. So I think we can absolutely do that in this country for women's pro sports.
Yeah, I love the jail breakout in the PWHL, and now NHL teams are talking about it.
Yes.
There's the new penalty shot way they're doing it. Just, I love that it's a little bit different. It's the same game. And I'm just reading about the blue card that's going to be trialed, which is a new thing in soccer they're going to be bringing in, which is it's between a yellow and a red, sometimes a red.
Yeah, they're trialing it.
But okay, this is exactly what we mean about trial and error. Like, you know, VAR has changed the game completely. When you and I started playing, Amy, we could pass back to the goalkeeper and they could pick it up. The game has had to completely change because that rule. So it's an interesting thing. And I am a rugby fan. I'm from a rugby family. And the sin bin, the way that players have gotten away with speaking to officials is abhorrent to me. I hate it. So if this new innovation at the minimum creates some kind of professional discourse, you know, and as soon as you're disrespectful, maybe it's a 10-minute out, not a red card, you know, which is the harshest. But playing a man down for 10 minutes is going to be pretty painful. So I don't know how it's going to go, but at least they're trying something to try and influence the disrespect, I think, that's happening between officiating and the teams and players. So I don't know.
I think that's the most important thing. Is like, I agree with rugby. I don't know if you saw it. It was in my Instagram feed. It was a woman referee in rugby and she brought the two captains in and she said, you know, boys, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. We had the conversation before the game and you told me you're going to take care of your team in terms of discipline or in terms of whatever factor it was that she was addressing. She said, and you've not done it. So have you, how did you lie to me? Or can you sort this out right now? And they're like, no, we can do it. Mm-hmm. And so like, that's what we need more of in football and in soccer. And so I don't know if we need more interventions. I was just, we talked about another pod on Footy Prime about the fucking meetings they probably had about what color card it should be. Like, they, it's so many man hours and woman hours wasted, right? Trying to come up with the color card. So I don't think more interventions are necessary, but I absolutely do agree with you that the respect has to be back in terms of how the referees are treated.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't on that pod. I would have absolutely agreed that this is a good move and it is an intervention. But if you can get away with VAR and those kind of stoppages, this is blue card, get off the field. Game goes on. It's already shorter than some of the VAR stoppages. I hate how the game has gotten. I think it does a terrible job at selling the game to the viewership. I think the example, I was watching my nephew's game, you know, who's 12, and how they were talking to the ref. I hated it. I definitely had something to say to him and his teammates. I mean, even my nephews here who are like 9 and like the parents talking to the ref. I'm like,
I know it's disgusting.
So we need to start showing better example at the top levels. That's just the reality. You can see how much kids are watching by how they celebrate the same ways as the stars. Mm-hmm. So you can see what they're picking up. So if this is something that's going to help that part of the game, I'm all for it. I hate it. So have I been clear enough?
You have been. And we might have to agree to disagree because I think you are a lover of attacking football. Mm. You love progressive possession. You don't really like the negative stuff. You want players to go and attack. And if you're down a man, you're going to drop, you're going to bunker, and it's not really going to be promoting that attacking football.
But I would say that that is not always true. And often it's a team that's a player down that ends up winning games. That's true. So I think it will change. It will be a tactical change, just a new part of the game. Just like
Barnes in the works. Yeah.
Has had to change the game and these big breaks and how you stay ready to go. And I mean, the game is always evolving. And I just think those that are stuck in their ways have had to adapt so many times now that it's it is what it is. Like, the game has to change. It's not working right now. But yeah, I love that talk with Emma, and it was such an exciting week. I loved watching Arsenal demolish Man U, and it'd be interesting to, there's such a big gap now between 3 and 4 in the WSL. Which I don't love. I think that league needs to get tighter. It's a big spread, but at least there's 3 at the top that are right in the fight. It's pretty exciting for
them.
And
I love seeing Chloe Lacasse get starts because she got that midweek start. Was it in the Conti Cup? I think she started, and then she also started that game on the weekend where she scored.
Yeah, and people were talking about the goal. I'm like, what a instinct. Like, you know, that ball was coming at her with pace, and to be able to just redirect it was brilliant. And I love the fans were all, I think, singing her name at the end. We've got a lot of Canadians that are showcasing themselves across the world right now, and look forward to the NWSL season kicking off soon. And even more Canadians, Jessie Fleming playing down there, and a bunch of others that are showcasing and Sinky's potentially last season. Who knows? But it'll be nice to see those two playing together and Janine, obviously, from the same team.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And we should mention as well, because we talked about that record transfer fee, but going to Bay. But there's also, she joins Rachel Kundanagi. She joins Azizat Osceola, and then former Arsenal defender Jen Beattie at the new franchise, but also Lisiane Proulx from Boucherville, Quebec, just down the street from me, not too far away from you.
Did she play with us for Laval? Were you on that team?
No, I don't think I was still on that team.
Cindy was on the team.
Yeah, my sister Cindy. No. Wait, this goes back to our previous conversation with the same person.
Yeah, I think Cindy, I played a year. I stopped playing NWSL because I had some problems with how that place that was being run right at the beginning. And so I ended up coming back to Canada, and I played for the Comet de Laval.
Yeah, Comet de Laval. What year would that have been, Rhi?
Oh, was it 20? I don't remember, 13 or 14. She must have been.
Oh, yes. Oh, see, I wasn't playing. The last year I played was 2009.
No, I forget how old you are. And then...
Fuck you, Rian.
Yeah, she was. I remember her. Yeah, it's so nice to see her now playing and getting these opportunities. And I've no doubt she'll do well there. So exciting! Yep.
Canada continues to produce world class and like outstanding goalkeepers.
Yeah, what are we doing? Like, we really need to. It's so obvious to me. Like, the goalkeeper quality that we've got here is just, it's incredible. I worked with Anna as well. She's at Harvard. And
last name? Anna who?
I'm going to say her name wrong. Copia. She was on my under 17s, but she's another one. I don't know where she's obviously playing at university right now. But,
oh, Kurpenko?
Kurpenko. And he was a kid.
Yeah. I covered she was in the U20s when I covered them last summer at the World Cup.
Yeah. And and another goalkeeper that was with us is now signed for a club team in France. She left West Virginia to go play abroad there. So, I mean, honestly, our goalkeeping situation is pretty amazing. And, you know, out of Vancouver is Erin McNulty is the goalkeeper coach,
yes,
who I'm mentioning because she's also a player that played a big part in our youth system when she was coming through. She played with me with Ottawa as well, but nice to see. Then Mike Norris, who was a big part of our goalkeeper development. Now he's the head coach of Portland Thorns. So I do think we've got some great goalkeeper coaches here across the country. And apologies to those I haven't mentioned. I know there's so many in Quebec and Ontario, across the country, because they're doing an amazing job.
Yeah. But despite challenges in our youth systems, in terms of pathways, in terms of player development, in terms of scouting, we are doing some things right. So it's important, I think, to absolutely underline that and emphasize that and call out the people who are doing things the right way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, do you want to add anything else?
No. Thanks.
Okay. Well, we miss Claire. Shout out to Claire. Claire was doctoring and lifing. So Claire will catch back up with us on the next broadcast, but FuboTV.com/footyprime. Subscribe for Premier League, Serie A, W Gold Cup starts today. Canada's opening game is on Thursday. And Tony Bet for any wagering you'd like to place on those games, or on Rian taking down her messy bun and shaking it out like the hot librarian. So keep broadening your horizons, keep supporting independent podcasts, and cheers for listening. Bye.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by FuboTV and by Tony Beck. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG.
Thanks, Ray.
I gotta pee.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.